All right, let's do this thing. It's Coast to Coast AM. I am Raleigh James, and well, the winter solstice occurred yesterday in Capricorn. Full moon today in Cancer. Mars conjunct that, by the way, the moon. Jupiter conjuncting the sun. A lot of interesting stuff in the heavens, and I don't have any time to talk about it. I know that sounds like a comedy line, but the reality is that we got a packed show tonight, and I will be back on the 2nd of January, and a lot of what's going on astrologically right now is something that will be impacting the coming month and really 2008. So winter solstice always impacts the new year, but a lot of these aspects will do so as well. Now, under hot stories, if you want to go from astrology to astronomy, Lex has put the full moon meets Mars up, and you probably want to see that as well. A number of other things, too, when you go to the website that I'll tell you about coming up. But I thought tonight we'd talk about near-death experiences. The old everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Well, we're gonna die. That's right. Nobody's gotten out of here alive yet. And I think that most of us really do want to know that we're going somewhere. I mean, truly know that. And that is the fascination of near-death experiences. But the question here is, how do you verify it? How do you know that this is something more than just some psychotic dream that's, somehow induced when you're lacking of oxygen? Well, what if someone was able to know something they otherwise could not possibly know? And that's where we get interested. The descriptions of places that they couldn't possibly have been or the scenes that they couldn't possibly have viewed. But what if somebody blind could see? And by the way, that's not nearly as easy as it sounds. If you've never seen anything, you've got no ability to process visual information. So that in its own way is a nightmare. But the blind have a lot to teach us here. And actually, that's true anywhere, I should say. Being in radio for so long, I've had a number of blind friends. And the things that I've noticed over the year is that the biggest challenge if you're blind is not what you're not visually processing. It's what the sighted people can't see in you, the misconceptions and the ignorance. You know, it would be comical if this wasn't affecting people. I've been out to dinner with people who are blind. When the waitress will come over, she'll look at me and say, well, what will he have? Well, I don't know. Ask him. He's not dumb, right? or the shouting, or I could go on and on. It's just, it's embarrassing. My favorite might be the speaking very slowly, right? Please. Again, if this wasn't such an impact, it would be maybe a comedy bit. But the reality is I've also worked with people who've been fired by employers saying, oh, you can't run the board. You can't see it. Come on. We can't leave you alone. There are probably 722 reasons why you don't hire the best person for the job. People who are educated or intelligent. And I know it sounds like I'm going on and preaching, but it really is one of my hot buttons here because I've seen it so often. And as I started to look at NDEs and what the blind have to offer, 80% of the blind who have dealt with NDEs have talked about being able to process things visually. And by the way, it hasn't been easy or even for some possible, but that they are seeing things and suddenly say, well, wait a minute. That tells you, if not necessarily there's life after death. I mean, that's another component. But what it does start you on the road to is saying that the mind is, in fact, separate from the body. And the senses are, in fact, separate from the body. That when you are able to, in an NDE, be lifted from the body, so to speak, and you are able to process things in ways that your body is not ever able to do, particularly those, of course, blind from birth, that's a real story. And so I thought we'd talk about that and, of course, later other things having to do with NDEs as well. But this hour I wanted to spend with Vicky Noratuk, who has had not one but two, count them, two NDEs. And she's fascinating. The first time I heard her actually was on an Art Bell show, and it was one of those laugh out loud moments for me because Vicky was telling her story and she was talking about how she was involved in a car accident. Now, she prefaced this by saying that she was blind from birth and she was involved. And Art says, were you driving? And, you know, I still laugh about that. And I'm sure that Art does, too, because the most comical part was just as she was saying, no, Art, I'm blind. He was realizing the same moment. And his reaction was just the absolute best. Yeah, all the reasons we love Art. But in the meantime, you'll hear it firsthand and a lot more from Vicky. And if you're saying, Raleigh, you don't sound like you. Well, I've been in a battle with the flu. And so earlier this week when my temperature was 102.7 and I said I'm a dial position, I thought, well, that's Wednesday. Certainly it'll get better. And so Thursday, it's 103.1. For those in radio, I say, I've been demoted to a Class A. All right. But the bottom line was I still thought by Thursday, hey, by Sunday night, you're golden. All right. I'm not gonna belabor golden other than to say that I am sitting up by virtue of the fact that I can lean on something. But that that said, I've leaned on a lot of listeners for this, and in fact, psychic healer Jimmy McKimmy sent me cures, and of course, I'm willing to try anything. And I decided early on the show was going to happen either way, and I would do my best to get through this, and not only get through it, but make it enjoyable for you. So a number of things coming up tonight, and some that I'm probably completely clueless about myself. So it should be fun. I'm Raleigh James, and it's Coast to Coast AM. It is Coast to Coast AM. I am Raleigh James. We got Vicki Noratuck, who has experienced not one but two NDEs and some startling events in them. And I was just talking to Wayne, who is wonderfully coordinating things at the studio end. And he said, I'm not sure about whether you're actually going to hear Vicki. So I thought, great, on top of everything else, technical problems, I'm ready. So Vicki, are you there?
I am here.
All right, and you hear me?
Yes.
Well then, hey, everything's golden. Thank you. And by the way, of course, I'm hearing myself back, which is a little problem, and I don't know if Wayne's hearing that too. If he's not, then I won't worry about it. But otherwise, I'll just pretend that I'm doing the show from the Rose Bowl. But it's exactly what it sounds like at my end. But that's fine. I got so many questions to you. And again, thank you for that great laugh when you were explaining that to Art years ago, and he asked if you were driving.
So, oh yes.
that's one of the best moments in radio, truly.
Well, I'm old enough to have a license. I went down to DMV and I said, I know I've got visual problems and I do have contacts. They said, we don't care who you know, you still can't get a license.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So my big question to you, blind from birth, is tell me about these NDEs.
Well, I've never been able to see anything in my life, ever. Not shadows, not color, not light, nothing. And in both of them, I saw the one when I was 22 was very detailed. I was dead for 4 minutes due to a car accident caused by a drunk driver. And I had a skull fracture, concussion, neck injury, back injury, and leg injury. And they said that if I'd hit my head even like half an inch lower, I would not be alive at all, definitely. So this was a full-blown visual experience. The first one was when I was 12 years old, and I had appendicitis. And then I just saw Jesus during that, and he told me to go back to my mother because she was crying and that I needed to go home. And wow. That was basically all there was to that. But
Whoa. I see you said something that's fascinating. You saw Jesus. Now, did you actually, when you say saw, did you see him in a visual representation?
Yes, I did.
Now, so this had to be the first visual representation you ever had of anything.
Yes, but I thought then I was dreaming because I was 12 and I didn't quite understand what was going on.
Okay, let me still back up though. Had you ever dreamed before in a visual image?
No, and that's what I couldn't understand back then being a kid, and I was in intensive care, and I didn't understand what was going on. I mean, I really was sick. I had peritonitis through my whole system, and I wasn't sure if I was just imagining. And then when I was 22 and I had this full-blown visual thing and all kinds of things that happened, I knew that it had not been something that I just imagined.
Okay, so when you were 12, basically, when you came back to your body, you sort of chalked it up to, well, that was a weird dream experience, and didn't try to analyze, did you see anything, or what were these images, or anything beyond that? It wasn't something that lingered in your mind.
Well, it lingered in my mind, all right, but I just couldn't explain it, and I just sort of dismissed it and went on, and then when I was 22, the whole thing came back again, and it made more sense.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Here you are, 22. Tell me about this fateful night.
I was driving home. I work as a musician, and I'd been entertaining at a restaurant, and I was being driven home, and this accident happened, and I was thrown out of the car, dragged across the pavement, and then a woman that weighed almost 300 pounds landed on top of me. She was pretty heavy, and she compounded my injuries further, but I'm glad that she herself had not been hurt, but I was the only one who was injured in that accident.
Oh, my God.
And I went in and out of my mouth several times.
Tell me about that.
I was in a body, and the only way that I can describe it was a body of energy or of light. And this body had a form. It had a head, it had arms, and it had legs. And it was like it was made out of light. And it was everything that was me.
Yeah,
everything that was all of my memories, my consciousness, everything. And it kept going in and out of my mouth.
Okay, it was your etheric body.
Yes.
Okay, and so in and out of the mouth of your physical body. Now,
yes.
Again, if you're saying that you are in fact seeing this, that has to be mind-blowing because, of course, until this moment, you've never seen your body, have you?
No, and it was scary at first. Because I couldn't, I was up above the street, and then I was going in and out of my mouth, and it was like I couldn't make up my mind whether I was going to stay in that body. And then there was this period of silence, and then I was at Harborview Medical Center, and I was up on the ceiling, and I was totally out of the body then, looking down at everything that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the male doctor said, well, it's a pity now that she could be deaf as well as blind because there's blood on her left eardrum. And then the female doctor said, well, we don't even know if she's going to survive, and she could be in a permanent vegetative state if she does.
Oh.
And that made me mad.
Well, yeah, considering you were hearing and taking in every bit. But now, again, when you've never visually processed anything, to all of a sudden see images, how do you even know what they are?
I didn't at first. That's what was so frightening. It was terrifying. And a lot of people have asked me, well, wasn't it wonderful to be able to see?
No.
No, it was horrible, and I wouldn't have wished it on my worst enemy at first.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking this is the world's worst nightmare. Now, the other thing I'm wondering about, because clearly when somebody's listening to this and is blind from birth and they're in a corporeal state, as we are, the idea that this is even possible is almost preposterous. But the other thing is that when people have NDEs, the things they are able to do, even if they're, you know, fully don't have any impairments physically, the things they're able to do are so far above what the human body normally can.
Yeah.
That maybe there is some help in being able to process this for you.
Yeah, there was. And I was able to pick up on the doctor's thoughts.
Okay. What was he thinking?
Well, the male doctor was very compassionate, and he was really worried about me. And I thought, oh, my God, is that me they're talking about? Am I dead or what? And then I saw the physical body, and I looked down, and I recognized my wedding ring from my first marriage. And
okay.
I thought, oh, that is me.
And now, let me ask you about that, because when you say recognize, obviously you knew your wedding ring tactily.
Yes.
Because you'd felt it. But how did that tactile feeling translate into you saying, oh, well, that's what it would look like if I could see it?
Well, it was hard. I mean, I knew that ring because I knew the feel of it, and I knew that it had a little tiny diamond chip in the wedding ring, and then it had a bigger stone in the engagement ring part. It was a very tiny little ring,
uh-huh.
And it had orange blossoms on the corners, and it was kind of straight, and I recognized it. I just recognized it. Oh, that's my ring, and that is me, and it was really weird, and then I couldn't communicate with the female doctor. I wanted to talk to her, and mm-hmm. It seemed like she was really caring, and they kept panicking, and they kept saying, we can't bring her back, we can't bring her back. And I was thinking, what are they so excited about? You know, big flipping deal if they can't bring me back. I really didn't care.
Right. You're fine there on the ceiling. There's no problem.
You know, I'm fine. I didn't have any pain. You know,
right.
What
right.
I'm worried about. And
now, Let me also ask, because normally in a hospital setting, you know, you're not wearing any jewelry, anything, you know, but all this. But I assume because this is like an emergency situation that they just took you as you were and immediately started to work.
Yes. And well, back then they taped your rings on. Even when I had gallbladder surgery, they taped my wedding ring on. And
they did?
Yeah. Back in 1977, they did. And this was in 1973.
Here's my question about that. You know, the times I've had surgery and stuff, sometimes your hands really swell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my God, if you're wearing rings, this can be very constricting.
Yeah, it might have been, but they kept it on me, so that's all I know. But
medical science is always a wonder. But all right, so, and you know, by the way, some of the reasons I'm asking you some of these questions are individuals have emailed me saying, I want to know about this. So yeah. I'm throwing everybody else's questions in
exactly.
as well.
Well, I tried to reach out to the female doctor to try to get, you know how you try to grab hold of somebody to get their attention, to make them listen? And I was trying to tell her I was all right. And I could sense her caring and concern, too. And I reached out my right hand, and it went right through her right arm.
Oh, dear.
And she couldn't feel me, she couldn't hear me, and she couldn't see me. And I got really frustrated, and I thought, well, heck with this noise. I'm out of here. And as soon as I thought that, I went up through the ceiling as if it were nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I remember thinking at the time, oh, that's how Jesus did it.
Ah, that's great.
When he was resurrected and went into the closed room and they couldn't figure out how he got in there.
Yeah.
And he went in, I went out.
Yeah, you betcha. All right, so here you are. Now you're out.
And I was up above the street again, and I was cavorting in the air, feeling like a puppy rolling around in the grass because I didn't have to worry about running into anything, and it was so nice just to be free.
Yeah.
And then this vehicle formed itself around me. And vehicle is the only thing, or tube or something. I don't know quite, but it was a mode of transportation, that's for sure. And
okay.
It formed around me. And then there was no one in it with me. I was alone. But I knew there were other people ahead of me and behind me. And what they were doing, I don't know, but there were people ahead of me and people behind me, but I was alone in my particular conveyance. And I could see out of it. And it went at a tremendously, horrifically rapid rate of speed. But it wasn't unpleasant. It was beautiful, in fact.
Now, this is interesting because normally we hear about the tunnel experience, but your tunnel seems to enable you to see out from it at the same time.
Yes, I could. I could see through apertures. Apertures are the only word I could think of in this vehicle or tube that I was traveling in. I could see out of it.
Wow.
And I went past hell, and there is definitely a hell.
I don't like this part of the story. What do you mean?
I
went past hell. Where is hell?
Well, I went past it. I traveled past it, and I heard and smelled it, and there was some friends of mine, it was about 8 or 9 years ago, they showed me this sample of rock from Sodom and Gomorrah, and I touched it, and I could not get that smell off my hands for like 3 days, and I kept washing and washing and washing, and I could relate to that Lady Macbeth feeling, and that smell, that sulfuric odor was the same that emanated from that place, and I remember thinking, I want no part of this area, and as soon as I thought that, my conveyance went even faster.
Oh, well, that's interesting. That's real interesting because that sort of tells you that you wind up where you resonate. But then again, who in their right mind would say, "Oh, bring me to the stench"?
So. Yeah, it's really I don't know. It's really weird. I just know that I wanted no part of it. And as soon as I thought that, then my vehicle went even quicker away from it.
This is good for the rest of us to know. Remember that. We want no part of this. I like that. All right.
I was very adamant about that in my thought process.
Now, this conveyance, if you will, did this seem like it was just a straight linear path?
I was reclining in this thing. I wasn't sitting straight up, but I wasn't lying down in it either. Mm-hmm. I was sitting back, and it was just so fast. I can't even begin to tell you where it went or whatever. Okay. it was just fast,
but it didn't seem to make turns and go over curves or anything.
It was so quick, I don't know what it did.
Okay.
It was just as soon as I got to where I was supposed to get, I heard this incredibly beautiful music.
And we're hearing it right now. Hang on a minute, Vicki. I'm Raleigh James. It's Coast to Coast AM. Well, what about those who left and came back? The interesting thing when we talk near-death experiences, and that's what we're doing with Vicki Noratuck, is that they are so numerous that it's undeniable they're occurring. Of course, the real question is, what is it? And next hour, we'll be talking with Elaine Stout, who is president of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. But now we're talking to Vicki Noratuk, a two-time near-death experience survivor with quite the tale. So we left Vicki in the conveyance vehicle just past hell. Again, that's a little unnerving, don't you think? And and we will pick her up right there in mere moments with Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. It is Coast to Coast AM. I am Raleigh James, and we're going to bypass hell and go right back to Vicki Noratuk. All right, Vicki, so you're on your way. You're getting out of this place. And, of course, for people just tuning in, we are talking near-death experiences, which is hopefully the only way we have recollections of hell. But where do you wind up?
Well, I ended up in this place that was similar to a park shelter in a lot of ways. It was beautiful. It had huge flowers, and I was ejected very pleasantly enough, you know, from this vehicle, and then Jesus was there. I was greeted by two deceased classmates and two people who had taken care of me when I was a child, and then Jesus was there as well, and my grandmother was there. She had died 2 years before. Everybody that was there to greet me was dead, and Jesus held up his hand, and he goes, "No." My grandfather was there in the background as well, I was going to say, too, but anyway, I hadn't known him. He passed away just prior to my birth, and he appeared to my mother and told her, "Don't worry, sis, you're going to have a little girl and she'll live." So that was kind of an interesting situation, too, because I was only in the womb 22 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he told me that it was not my time yet. When Jesus was speaking to me and he held up his hand, he said, "It is not your time yet. You may not go to my Father's house now. You must go back and give birth to your children, and you must learn and teach about loving and forgiving. You will be severely tested. You have been through many hard things, and you will go through many more, some of which man will call unforgivable, but you must ask me for help, and you must show love and forgiveness in all of your dealings with your fellow man, because loving and forgiving are the key to life."
Interesting. And that's why I say that's interesting, is that's sort of the universal that we hear from everybody, is that that universal love is the message that that they come back with from this. That's sort of the directive.
He was very specific about it, and he told me that it didn't matter whether I thought they deserved forgiving or not. You know, that would be up to him. And he said, "Vengeance is mine," saith the Lord. You know, he was very emphatic about that I should let it be dealt with through him and to ask him for help to deal with it all.
Now, when he said that, since that time coming back, have you felt any direct connection where you can call on Jesus and have him physically, and it doesn't have to be visually, but appear to you in some way so that you feel the connection?
Yes. There was one point at which I was attacked by a stranger. I was almost murdered. I didn't know what to do. And the same voice came, and it said, "Pray out loud." And it separated the words very distinctly. And I did, and I just said, "God, please bless this man and help him to realize that this isn't the way to treat people." And he couldn't handle it. He said, "Why don't you cuss at me, and why don't you fight back, because then I could put you to sleep real easy." And I said, "I hate what you've done to me. It was rape and attempted strangulation." Mm-hmm. And he said, He said, "Why don't you just fight me, because then it would be real easy for me to terminate you." And I said, "I hate what you've done to me, but I love you as a child of God." And then he goes, Stop it. "You remind me of my mama when she used to take me to Sunday school." And I said, "Well, maybe that's where you belong again." And then he just wept and wept and wept and said, "Oh, God, oh, Jesus, I'm sorry. Oh, God, what have I done? I'm sorry." And then he let me go.
Wow. Wow, there's a story for you. All right, so you were told about your coming children, and you were told about your mission, the universal mission, if you will, to love and forgive. Any other knowledge of the future or your purpose or life in general?
Yes. Before he sent me back, I argued with him at first, and I said that I didn't want to go back and that I didn't want to leave that place. And he said, "You will return, but you must do this. Your work is not finished." And then he said, "Let them know of this day and tell them that I am. And I thought, well, that's kind of a strange way to express it. And, of course, now I know the scriptures more, but at that time I really didn't understand why he said it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, first watch this. And he showed me a review of my life. And I had struggled with suicidal feelings. And he, for one thing, told me that it grieved him if someone attempted that, but that he loved us so much and wanted us to know that he was with us through everything that we went through. And he, during the time that I was being shown this review of my life, he was with me in all of it. And not only did I feel my own feelings and in exquisite detail saw everything, but I also felt what everyone else had felt. And, for example, this grandmother that had died 2 years before, she had been mentally ill. Her doctor said that she was psychotic, that she was very high-functioning psychotic, but she had raised me pretty much. And I'm very grateful for a lot of the things that she did for me, but she was abusive in many ways. And I struggled with a lot of ambivalent feelings toward her, but when I saw that review, the life review, then I was able to find out what it was like from her vantage point, and I, in essence, experienced her mental illness.
Right.
And then I felt just wrenching, gut-wrenching is the only word I can use for it, compassion for her, and I was able to heal a lot better from the things that had happened.
Oh, you betcha. Being able to put yourself in someone else's perspective is so rare for those of us here and so enlightening. But just to hear you were raised by a psychotic, you know, when you think about that, my God, I can see depression and suicide would have to have crossed your mind along the path.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Now, in terms of, so there's one. Was there anybody else there that you saw and realized, my God, it's different when you're dead?
Well, my classmates, Debbie and Diane, we went to the School for the Blind in Oregon, and blind kids can be unkind too, and Debbie and Diane were mentally challenged,
mm-hmm.
and the kids at the school made fun of me for being their friend, and I said, you know, if you guys have a problem with it, then live with it, but they're my friends, and that's the way it's going to be. And when I saw them, I knew instantly who they were, but they were fine. There was nothing wrong with them anymore. And everybody vibrated at different speeds. Everybody had different brilliances or brightnesses. And everybody vibrated is the only word I can think of to express it at a different speed or rate.
It's interesting. I'm sitting here wondering, because, of course, there's another question of are there multiple lives and all of that, because, you know, the children appeared to you, I assume, at the age you knew them.
No. They did not.
Oh, okay.
They were the best of every age. They were timeless.
Oh.
They were young. They were old. They were middle-aged. They were, I knew who they were right away, but I guess if you could say they were anything, they were adult, but they were the best of, you could tell the childlike quality of their having been children and the wisdom of the very old, but they were in the prime of their existence. It was like everything was prime in that place. The weather was prime, the flowers, the birds, everything was just perfect.
What do you think in terms of, as you're telling me this, was it in terms of quality that allowed you to individuate each of these people and say, oh, that was my grandmother and that was my grandfather and these were the kids from school? Because when you're talking to them as timeless essences, there has to be something in that essence that allows you to connect to say, oh, yeah, that was Mary Jo or whomever.
They communicated with me mentally or telepathically is the closest word that I can come to describe it. But we weren't allowed to touch each other because we were starting to. And that was when Jesus got between all of it, or among all of us, and separated us. And he held up his right hand, and he goes, no. And he would not allow us to touch one another. And there was a certain gate that I could not go toward, because I knew that if I went to that gate, I could not come back.
Right. And I assume if you were touched by one of them, you couldn't come back.
I don't know, because it seems like a lot of people's instances are different. And in mine, we were not permitted to touch each other.
So at the point that he raised his hand, said no, is this the time your journey started to reverse?
No, not yet. That was when, that was at the very beginning. And then he showed me the life review and everything from my birth up until the car accident. And then he said that I must go back.
When you saw that life review, and of course that's the kind of thing that frankly I think most of us fear, or we should, unless we're totally not humble, but was there anything that stood out that was really the aha moment?
The whole thing. Oh. It was just, I mean, to be aware of everyone else's perception of the event was quite, I mean, it was overwhelming. The emotions that I experienced were very overwhelming, especially in the situation with my grandmother.
Sure. Sure, you betcha. All right, so you go through all this, you get the message in terms of you're here to love and you're here to forgive. You're going to raise two children.
Three.
And were you told when you'd have them and the circumstances? No.
But I did have three. I have three living children, then I lost three. Oh. And I was widowed. My name is now Blazon, incidentally. It's Blazon, but...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, it was very recent. It was October 20th, but God brought me the love of my life now, and I have never known so much happiness in my entire life as I have found with my husband now, Robbie.
That's wonderful. That's a marvelous story. Now, was there anything in your NDE where you were told you will meet the love of your life?
No. I was just told that I needed to come back and that my work was not finished.
Mm. Well, I wonder what that's about. And but your
know.
Work is not finished. Now, other than the idea of loving and forgiving, were you told of any other work you were specifically here to do? I mean, raising the children, clearly.
Yes, and then of course I had the three children that I lost, and then I have seven stepchildren altogether too.
All right, so you've got a zip code, but other other than raising the herd, were you told that there was any other life purpose? I mean, believe me, raising the herd is enough, but curious.
Not specifically, but I was told that it was very important and that I needed to go back for it, and he said, let them know of this day and tell them that I am. And that was what I was commanded to do.
Okay. All right. Now, when you came back, I assume that that was an equally quick trip?
It was awful. That was awful. And it was a reverse of my going there, but then the pain began, and then I was back in the body, and it was heavy and horrible and I was nauseated and in shock and I was finally able to talk to someone about it, and I did confirm the things that I had heard about the blood on my left eardrum and all of that did indeed take place. But back then in 1973, people did not discuss clinical death like they do now. And one nurse said, well, you must have hit your head a lot harder than people thought you did, and I didn't want to talk to her anymore.
Right.
But there were quite a few people that did believe me, and I did share my story with quite a few of them. And then when my daughter, Nicole, is now 31, but when she was like 2.5 years old, three maybe, she had stomach flu, and I was up all night with her, and I was reading in a Braille Reader's Digest, I found a condensation of Raymond Moody's Life After Life, and I just burst into tears, because then I realized that there were other people who had experienced what I have. And subsequently, I came to learn that there was a deaf man who experienced total full-blown hearing in his clinical death, and for the first time he had heard the spoken word.
That had to be the best confirmation you could have gotten.
Yes.
Yeah, suddenly, I'm not crazy, I'm not alone. I can only imagine how comforting that was.
Oh my, I can't put words to it. It was amazing to find people. And then I heard on the radio, I heard Kimberly Clark Sharp, who is the local International Association of Near-Death Studies president in the Seattle area, and she was on the radio, and No, on television. I'm sorry. She was on television then. And I called the telephone number and got hold of her, and then things started happening to where I was interviewed by BBC and all kinds of other people about this situation, about the clinical death. Yeah.
Now, since this, and obviously all the, apart from the logistics of it, and is it real, was the ultimate message. That's what you were left with, the idea of the universal loving and forgiving. Has that caused your depression to lift?
Oh, my. Yes. And then also the fact that heaven is real, that what I experienced is real, that we don't just end with death, that I know this. And people can say all what they want about being delusions of a dying brain and all that. But as I said on Art Bell, what they don't realize is that they're focusing so much on the peel that they lose sight of the banana. And the peel is, of course, our physical body, and the banana is our whole essence, and it goes on.
You betcha. You betcha. Vicki, what a great story. And thank you for taking the time to share it with me. I think, you know, my feeling, again, is that when somebody can do things outside the body that's impossible for them to do within it, if it's not proof of, quote-unquote, life after death, it's certainly proof of life apart from the physical body. And that alone is liberating.
Yes.
So I appreciate you sharing it, and I hope we'll talk again sometime.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Likewise, and congratulations on the marriage.
Thank you.
All right, how nice. What a happy ending that is, don't you think? We'll talk to Yolaine Stout next hour and the hour after that, and then we'll take your calls in the final hour. Yolaine, as I was mentioning earlier, president of IANDS, and quite a story herself as well.